Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chad and I are chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of tfmetalsreport.com. Now Craig, look, there's no denying that the gold market is being ignored right now. It's unloved, even in the face of some of the so-called safe assets out there rising. Bonds are getting a buy, even the dollar has rebounded. Now that can put pressure on gold, but it wasn't that long ago that I was hearing the argument that gold and the dollar were going to go up together. But again, gold seems kind of stuck in this 1800 level. The gold shares are struggling, which could be telling us that maybe another drop is in for gold. What's your takeaway from this environment right now where gold, again, unloved, even as there has been a bit more of a defensive shift in the markets?
You know, thank you, Corey. It's good to talk to you. I was sitting here thinking as you were speaking, it's been 3 weeks since we last spoke. The last couple of Thursdays, we haven't been able to get together. And nothing's changed. I mean, I think prices are exactly where they were 3 weeks ago. Gold was maybe right below 1800. Silver was clinging to 26 and its 200-day moving average. And here we are 3 weeks later. Nothing has changed. It's very frustrating year. I'll be the first to tell you that. You know, if the forecast that I'd had this year for higher gold prices and silver too were mainly based on sharply negative real rates, you know, where maybe your 10-year treasury note yields 1.5%, but inflation's 3.5%. And so you're negative 2. Heck, we were negative 1 last year at this time, and gold went to 2,100. And so now we're sitting here, treasuries have rallied over the last 3 weeks. We're down to 1.3 inflation. We'll get another report next week, but as of the last report was up near 5. I mean, geez, Corey, if you'd have told me back in January, ah, Craig, don't worry about it, man. Real rates will be negative 3.5% by summer. I'd have gone. I would not have thought gold would be $1,800. Okay. But I've been expecting sharply negative real rates because of yield curve control. Because, I mean, we all know, everybody knows the math. I mean, the U.S. either economically or politically or budgetarily cannot afford higher interest rates. I mean, the interest on the national debt, credit cards, mortgage rates, I mean, you name it. Can't afford it. And the only way the Fed knows to grow their way out of extreme levels of debt is by inflating it away through negative real interest rates. And so how are they going to do that? Well, it's always been through yield curve control. But, you know, they don't just come out without having done nothing and then say all of a sudden out of the blue, we're not going to allow the 10-year treasury to yield above 1.5%. There are steps they take. They're always reactive and not proactive. And the first series of steps is jawboning, right? That's what they do. That's how these Fed, they're politicians. That's how they roll. And so they have been jawboning yield curve control all year, and very few people seem to understand this. That's what this transitory thing is. You know, the Fed staring in the face of the soaring inflation saying, oh, don't worry, it's temporary. Oh, don't worry, it's temporary. It'll be gone in a couple of months. Well, it may not be 5% all the time going forward, but even if it pulls back to 3 or 4, that's still pretty stout inflation compared to what we've seen. But they've convinced the bond market to keep buying U.S. debt, funding the U.S. government at 1.3%, because for somehow the bond market still believes that inflation is transitory. Because you'd be an idiot to buy a 1.3% 10-year note if you think inflation is going to average 3 or 4 or 5% over the life of that bond, that note. So they've convinced everybody through this jawboning that it's transitory. And that has bled over into gold. Because even with inflation expectations soaring and remaining high, even with all those inflation break-evens remaining high, even with the stated CPI rate remaining high, gold falls. And it's because that bleed over, this transitory stuff. So the rubber is going to meet the road in the months ahead. If it's not transitory, or if, you know, we don't go all the way back to 1% inflation by the end of the year, then the Fed's going to have to move into a more active phase of yield curve control. But for now, man, that is the fight we are fighting.
Yeah, Craig, you raised some interesting points here, because for a long time, the Fed was worried about, starting to raise rates early, and they were getting ready. They were thinking about starting to to hike rates. But at the same time, out of the other side of their mouth, they've been talking about wanting that inflation. They wanted it at 2%. Then eventually they wanted it, hey, we're fine letting it run hotter than 2%. So then they finally get some inflation and immediately, instead of taking a victory lap, kind of swatted it down with the it's just transitory. Because I think you nailed it on the head. They don't want people to quit investing in bonds, because if they stop investing in bonds and rates go up, then the debt becomes untenable. But you would think with this kind of environment, with inflation still pretty high compared to rates that are falling as people buy bonds, you would think gold would be doing better. Where's the disconnect right now with gold in this negative real rate environment? And why do you think it's not performing a little bit better than it is with rates falling and with inflation rising?
Well, it's a function of sentiment. It's a function of whether it is transitory or not. There's all these different things going on. I could get deeper into the weeds and tell you that I believe there's probably a not desirous of a higher gold price at this point at the central bank level. Because again, how would the transitory narrative work if gold was soaring at $2,700 or $2,800 or something that would be appropriate for negative 3.5% real rates? I mean, that would stick out like a sore thumb. So there's maybe some reason to help manage the price lower. Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe that's part of it too. But, you know, I look at this whole situation. You try to keep it all, in the big picture. I mean, it was, Chad, it was not even a year ago. It was the end of July last year when that article appeared on Bloomberg on a Friday afternoon that said the Fed was preparing this two-pronged policy change, that they were going to move to inflation averaging so that inflation could run, above 2% and not, prompt fears of immediate rate hikes. But then the second part of that was yield curve control. That came out at the end of July. The late August then is Jackson Hole, that annual meeting, that the Kansas City Fed puts on in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and all the, the main Davos crowd and all the central bankers show up and glad hand each other. And it was at that meeting, virtually, that Powell then laid all this out. And he was terribly afraid of deflation at that point. I mean, this isn't even a year ago. And he was saying, deflation expectations lead to more deflation, which lead to more expectations in this terrible cycle that he was alluding to Japan, that Japan had been on for all this time. We can't afford that to take hold and all that stuff. Again, that wasn't even a year ago. And now he's got all this inflation from all these different, sources, COVID related and not. And they're trying to tamp it down by saying it's transitory. Man, it's helter skelter, And I this just prompts me to say again, I mean, it sounds like, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into my own words and maybe it doesn't sound like this at all. But I'm not trying to make excuses or come up with rationale for holding gold. But I have always, since I first started stacking gold in 2008, always looked at it as how many ounces I have, not the dollar price. Because gold and silver, I know you guys talk a lot about miners, that's a whole other story. But the physical gold itself, the physical silver itself, needs to be measured in ounces that you have, not the dollar value that fluctuates on a daily basis, because it's that physical metal that's your lifeboat. And it's how many ounces you have. How many ounces you might need, whether it's more or less, that's important. Not so much this day-to-day stuff that drives us all crazy.
That's a great point, Greg. And gold is real money, and it has been for thousands of years. Yep. You can measure it against a lot of different currencies. And in most currencies, honestly, gold's up dramatically for a long period of time. So we kind of get too myopic on the dollar price of gold instead of looking at it as just ounces in the ground. But I got one other question for you here, Craig. So if bonds are as low as they are, who in the world wants to buy bonds at these levels? And aren't people kind of being forced by default into the stock markets? And my question would be, do you think that because it's not a really great savings environment right now, there's not a lot of money in bonds, you're actually getting outstripped by inflation, that it kind of forces most investors into the general markets? And as long as the general markets keep making all-time highs like most of them have been recently, could that be stealing some of gold's thunder as people think of, and this is maybe an erroneous comment, but they think of these tech stocks as safe havens instead of gold, and could that be taking some of the shine off gold?
Sure, those are all valid points, Chad. No doubt about it, man. And you can clearly, anybody that is paying attention knows that if the stock market were to collapse 50%, it would be a calamity, right? I mean, not only would it be terribly deflationary, because that's trillions and trillions of dollars of retirement savings and market capitalization that would just evaporate, but you just think of, you know, because of this low interest rate environment, every pension fund, public and private, every insurance company, every hedge fund, you know, mutual funds, individuals that are all weighted, they cannot afford to have a stock market collapse, right? And so that's something that will always, you know, that now that's the Fed's business now, is to making sure that doesn't happen. As I look at what's happening today, I wrote today on my site about all of a sudden there's kind of I had a little growing concern in that I woke up this morning. I mean, this goes back now to 3 weeks ago. Okay, the FOMC 3 weeks ago, you know, they talked about the dot plot and all that stuff, but Powell himself, and he was right, said that the dot plot didn't mean jack, right? We're talking 18, 21 months from now. Who cares? It's meaningless. What was meaningful was that move to increase from zero to just a whopping 5 basis points what they're paying on excess reserves. Because in doing so, and they had to do it because there's so much cash floating around that it was, you know, there's not enough places to put it. It was threatening to push short rates negative. So he's trying to barbell this thing, short rates and long rates and all the, you know, yield curve control on the long end, but trying to keep short rates up so that you don't go negative. So they had to start paying on interest on excess reserves. Now, all of a sudden, we're $700-800 billion a night of cash that's being sucked out and parked at the Fed overnight. And then it goes back and it comes back and it goes back and it comes back. That's $800 billion. It could be in the stock market. It could be loaned out, you know, and loaned out again and loaned out again and multiplied, you know, to be $4-5 trillion if it was active, you know, and there was velocity of money in loan creation. But it's not. So it's actually, this is what they did, and this is all part of why the dollar's gone up and why gold went down 3 weeks ago, was actually a way to withdraw reserves and drain liquidity and bring cash in. And so that, you know, ultimately could impact the stock market. And all of a sudden today, that's what I was starting to wonder about, you know, because the only thing that was really up substantially, at least for a while, gold was, but also the bond market. The dollar was down. Stock market was down. Even though the dollar was down, commodities were down. And, you know, when those dots have connected like that in the past, it's been kind of I don't think we're at a global margin call yet, but we're just being kind of a global liquidation kind of thing. And we'll see where we go from here. But it'll be very interesting over the next couple of weeks, because we won't hear again from the Fed now until for another 3 weeks. And we may not get much then. Be interesting to see if this, you know, if the bond market keeps rallying and the stock market goes down, I'm just going to start telling you a number of things about, you know, how the plumbing works. And as you said, Shed, the Fed will react. They have to. And what if they all of a sudden reverse course by September because, you know, the stock market was down 10 or 15%? It's well, let's just leave it at that. It's going to be a very interesting couple of months ahead.
Exactly. But again, that's a big maybe, right? The Fed has been pretty steadfast in their policies. And unfortunately, even though they're printing money and it seems like there's still a lot of liquidity in the system, it's not moving to gold. And that's been the story since August. Gold continues in this downtrend here, Craig. And now it's kind of stopped at 1800. And 1800 is a good level historically for gold. But it isn't over those last 10 to about 10 months now. Do you see, because this recent bounce or rebound has been relatively weak, we're about 3 or 4 weeks through it and gold's moved about $50 higher, do you see another washout event coming to potentially retest that 1675 level that was the low earlier this year in March?
You know, it's funny, Corey, you mentioned washout. We've had four of them now. Since last August, and they total about $350, just four massive red candles. Prior to this most recent one, I thought, man, can they do that again? I mean, because one was right after the, you know, right in August last year, as we get smashed and everybody runs for the exits at once because we were so overbought. And then you had the one that came in right after the election when the vaccine news first hit in early November. And then you had the one that happened in very early January. That was another massive. And then I thought, God, could they? Nah, surely we can't have another $90, $100, you know, one or two down days. And here it came again. So could certainly happen again. And frankly, and again, this kind of goes right in that category. If my aunt had nuts, she'd be my uncle. If you could take those four red candles out, we'd be right where we were last year at this time, right? I mean, $350 back on, we'd be right back at that level. We'd be flat, or since August. But instead, but you can't do that, obviously. But it's just those four big, massive washout days that have us down $350. So it's always a risk. I don't think there's any doubt about it. All of the stuff as we go through the back half of this year, you know, if we're going to get pricing system changes due to this Basel III stuff and the LBMA has radical changes coming, if that all happens at the first of next year, well, who knows how that's going to impact all of the paper contracts, you know, and all of the hedging and everything else that's done on in New York and in London. So to answer your question, could there be another? Like I said, I was hoping there wouldn't be another one. And then 3 weeks ago happened. We'll see. As you know, it's never the stairway down and the elevator up. It's always the other way around. You take the stairway up and the elevator down. We can recover back to 1860, 1880, but you're never going to do it as quickly as we lost it. There's a lot of resistance ahead. We've already bumped into it 1820 a couple of times this week, but if you more like 1830 to 1840, there's going to be a real stout resistance area. We may not be able to plow through there on a recovery until we get closer to Jackson Hole and all this stuff that may happen in September. So I'm afraid we're kind of doldrumming it here. The risk is still down. You know, when you're below all the key moving averages, it seems like the algos are more apt to sell the rally than they are buy the dip. And you've certainly seen that this week too. So we're probably more apt for more frustration and grinding sideways. Like I said, like we have for the last 3 weeks, we'll probably do that for another 3 or 4 weeks. And then maybe, just maybe, we'll get a break as we go into the end of the year. I hope so, because otherwise, all three of us are going to drive ourselves bats by Christmas time.
Yes, that is very true. But you know what? In all fairness, 2019, 2020, it was a buy the dip mentality. Things were moving higher, and it was actually a pretty quick move. And now we've just been in this boring correction, and unfortunately, which seems to be continuing. What's your takeaway from the action in the stocks, though? Because if we want to go down that narrative where maybe liquidity is getting drained from the system and we will see some market weakness, we constantly hear from gold bugs that, oh, market weakness, that's going to drive gold. But we do historically see gold stocks get sold off hard on the back of that. I realize they bounce back quickly, but boy, oh boy, you can see some quick losses in gold stocks if the market seriously corrects. What's the balance here?
The worst part about the gold stocks on the chart right now is all the red candles. And that's been for 3 weeks now. You know, you get any kind of buying first thing in the morning. So you open higher, then you close below where you open. That's a red candle. And they're just being liquidated. It seems as, you know, we always think nobody cares. It seems like really nobody cares now. There's just nobody on the bid. Now, we're getting into that time of year where we're going to start getting some production reports next week and then some earnings reports, by the end of this month, early next. If we can get prices to stabilize, then the shares should stabilize too. But we are definitely still in a period, man, where they are hated. And again, almost makes it a contrarian play, Corey. You know, buy when everybody hates it. That's always been a TF Metals report adage. You always got to be ready to buy some when things look the worst and sell some when things look the best. Well, right now, man, the miners are about as hated as they've been in quite some time.
Yeah, very true. It's a tough adage, though. And unfortunately, the sector is ignored, right? It's not where we were early last year in 2019, where there was just more interest in the sector and it was moving higher. As much as we want to talk about debt, I feel like, boy, oh boy, that's been talked about forever in the gold sphere. And I guess it does all come down to the Fed. But right now, yeah, we need to note where investors are focused, and it's not in the gold sector.
Yeah, and Corey, one last thing. I mean, we get very sectors focused, right? You guys and me and everybody else. But there's a lot of sectors within the stock market that are sucking wind pretty badly. You know, these indices are driven by 8 or 10, 15 stocks. You know, the internal breadth of the stock market is pretty lousy on its own right. Stocks are below their 200-day moving average. Stocks that are down on the year. And so the miners are just, you know, they're kind of a victim of, again, everybody hating the sector, but also just nobody cares. All the money is in just a very narrow little group of stocks. And, you know, until that changes, until investors start to think they can make money somewhere else within the stock market, then, you know, it makes it hard for any sector, and not just the mining sector, to get a sustained rally. And we're going to keep fighting that too, probably.
All right, Greg, we're going to wrap it up there. Hopefully when we chat again next week or just even in a couple of weeks, it's a little bit more positive for the sector. But quite frankly, right now, there's no denying that there is still a downtrend here and stocks are getting hit. Greg, thanks as always for your time, buddy. We'll chat next week.
Au revoir, my friend.